stewardship, we have an opportunity to explore what this means, how we are each called and equipped to live our faith, how we might build up the living body of Christ, the church, in the world. That's better. This was a challenge that Paul addressed to the faith community in Corinth. Reading from 1 Corinthians chapter 3. According to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and someone else is building on it. Each builder must choose with care how to build on it, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one that has been laid, and that foundation is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, the work of each builder will become visible, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each has done. If what has been built on the foundation survives, the builder will receive a reward. If the work is burned up, the builder will suffer loss. The builder will be saved, but only as through fire. Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person. For God's temple is holy, and you are that temple. Do not deceive yourselves. If you think that you are wise in this age, you should become fools so that you may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are futile. So let no one boast about human leaders. For all things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, or the world of life or death, or the present or the future, all belong to you. And you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
O Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever and always acceptable unto you. For you are our rock and our redeemer, our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end. You're the source of our love and a wellspring of our joys. Amen. Well, this is awkward, isn't it? This morning's conversation can be very awkward about stewardship, I find, because it seems like, as I talk to people, that everyone seems to have an opinion about stewardship. Well, let me rephrase that. Everyone has a strong opinion about stewardship, if we were to really push the subject. People believe that what we do with our time, with our money, with our skills, is entirely at the discretion of the person. And people quite often believe that, along with sex and politics, the discussion of stewardship, the discussion of money, should be really left out of the church and out of the pulpit entirely. And I sometimes wonder where that comes from. Perhaps it might be from long memories that we have of long drawn out week by week stewardship campaigns that maybe went on longer than perhaps they needed to, where you heard about it Sunday after Sunday, the church's need for your money. Or perhaps you might remember some of the well-meaning elders that visited you in your home asking for your pledge for the coming year. As well as the intentions have been, For some, it has left people with perhaps feelings of guilt, feelings of inadequacy, feelings that they can't do enough as much as they would like for their beloved church. Indeed, this can be a very, as kids like to say, awkward conversation. Can I just suggest for a moment that instead of this being awkward, this can be an incredibly freeing, fresh component in our conversations. The conversation about stewardship should be natural and fresh and liberating. Because stewardship, if you think about it, is not just something that we focus entirely on, like this morning on Stewardship Sunday. Stewardship has a place in every dimension of what we do as a church. Week in and week out, there are small components, significant components of stewardship each and every week. Every week here on a Sunday morning, for example, our reader will invite the offering, make a call in his or her own words, the thoughts of why stewardship is important. The offering is taken physically as people share their abundance, and the procession comes forward, and we stand, we rise, and we sing. Prayer. A stewardship prayer is offered over those offerings, as we acknowledge not just the financial offerings that are given, but also beyond the treasures, the time and the talents that we all offer up for God's glory and God's grace. Now, I want everyone to know that it's my practice in ministry not to have knowledge of what people's financial givings are. I do not know who gives the most and who gives the least. I don't know what the right answer is in this, and because I know some ministers find it's very important in their practice to know who gives what and how that really kind of makes sense in making up the church. I can only tell you that my practice personally is that I don't think it's significant and important. I don't think it's important for me to know. I think it's important for me not to know what people are giving financially. But I can tell you that I've had some very significant conversations where people have trusted me, invited me to talk with them as they discerned what their appropriate offerings would be, what they feel that they discern their offerings of treasure, of time, of talent, of what they would like to offer up to the church and how that might look in the coming year. My belief is that stewardship should never be awkward. But this is just kind of one of the ways that we figure out our spiritual life. Stewardship is a practice of figuring out the way we live our life, the way we live, the way we love, the way we serve. It's just all part of that one big conversation. So if we can we open up some space, and just talk about stewardship this morning? Well, if we're going to talk about stewardship, perhaps we should have a common definition of what we're actually talking about. I suspect we all have different thoughts on what it is. I've heard lots of different definitions. I've been to conferences and read books, and I suspect you have done a lot of thinking in this as well. One definition that keeps sticking with me is stewardship is what we choose to do with God's stuff. Stewardship is what we choose to do with God's stuff. Now, I'd just like to unpack that definition. It might give you a reason of understanding why that's kind of stuck with me, and you might find it has some meaning as well. Firstly, in that definition is a reminder that there is a rich treasure that resides in each and every one of us. There is a rich treasure inside us. We are deeply blessed by God. We're deeply blessed with some time, with some talent, and with some treasure. And that resides in each and every one of us. And inherent in that is the source of that blessing. It's a reminder amidst our self-made culture that champions the rise of the individual and the power that we all have and how we make things on our own, that who we are, what we are, at the very foundation, at the very basis, it begins with God's blessing unto us. Certainly, we have all worked hard. We have all worked hard in our various professions, in our lives, and achieved many things as a result of all the hard work we have done. But at the beginning, began by the blessings that we receive from God. Those beautiful treasures, all of the ways that we are unique and gifted and enabled. Stewardship is what we choose to do with God's stuff. The second part of that definition that I think is significant for us is that we all have choice in this matter. We all have a decision that we need to make. Stewardship is what we choose to do with God's stuff. People sometimes ask to spend a bit of time with me as they go through a process of discerning, praying about what they're choosing to do with their time, talent, and treasure, a stewardship conversation. As we sit down, there is an acknowledgement that there is a choice in that movement. We choose what we are to do. And there, even for us to choose not to share, not to do anything, also we have to acknowledge is a choice as well. Every day we live, we need to discern how we are called to live, how we are called to love, how we are called to serve, and what that might look like, whether we are 9 or 99. We are constantly choosing how we are called to live as stewards of our lives. Stewardship is what we choose to do, God's stuff. So if we can kind of just agree as that being at least a starting point of the conversation, let's move on to the text before us. If we move into the text, and we're also going to focus on the Corinthians text this morning, we move into this amazing world of building and construction. Sometimes, for those of us that don't work in that industry, that becomes lost on us adults because we aren't fascinated like our children are. The children this morning provided a holy disruption, coming to the front and building church and showing us the energy and the wonder that they have. This is the kind of world Paul was trying to invite his hearers into. Fascination of building. Children can take a pillow and a blanket and play for hours as they build a house, right? They can take cardboard boxes and have a ball making a fort. The world of building, the world of construction is the world that Paul is inviting us into. But something more is being built. What Paul is talking about, it's a human construction. Paul is talking about building a human institution, a human gathering, a human building. Paul describes the work that he is doing as being a skilled master builder. Now, if we remember a few weeks ago, we were back in the second chapter of 1 Corinthians. We were talking about how the wisdom, the Sophia of God, comes from God into Christ and through Christ unto us. Paul is talking here about the skill being the wisdom of God that he is employing to build the church. And the master builder that he is really trying to be is really more akin than the hands-on building that the children were doing. It's more, if we looked at it in the Greek, it's more about being like an architect. Paul had a design. Paul had a dream. Paul had a vision. Paul had a hope of what the church, what the community of faith might truly look like. He shaped and he formed that community. And as he began to do it, what did it begin with? It began with, as some of the children reminded us, began with the foundation. Now, we all, in some ways, know that the foundation is critically important in order for the building to thrive. If we have shaky foundations, things will inevitably crumble over time. What Paul says that the foundation constructs on, the foundation of the church is constructed on Christ. Christ is to be the foundation of the church. Now, I just wonder, that's a beautiful thing to say, but what does that truly mean when we consider building on Christ as the church? What would that look like if we knew that Christ was being the foundation of the church? Some of our children had crosses on top of their churches that they built. They wanted people to know that that was Christ's home, the home of Jesus. What does that mean? Well, for me, as I was thinking about having Christ as the foundation, what that means for me is that the church, the building, has to be an otherworldly building. The building of the church has to be different than any other building in the entire community, because that's what Christ was about. The church, if you think about it, is the only organization that exists not just for its members, but also for those who are not there as well. We are here certainly for the members. We offer compassionate care and growth and worship and all the things we do. But we're bigger than that, aren't we? We are bigger than just those that are part of the church. We are here for those who are not here yet. We are here for the larger community the way Christ was as well. The church exists for those that are here and for those that are not here yet. Church hopes, and it prays for those who are hungry in body, spirit, and it offers food for them. The church is there for those that are lost and seeks to offer a guidance, a compass. The church is there for those who are vulnerable, those who are on the margins, those who are in need. The church seeks to be there for all, not just for its members. The church seeks to model Jesus' way of self-giving, Jesus' way of sacrifice, Jesus' way of love to the larger community. And that's not easy, is it? That is not easy because I don't know about you, but I know what I like, and I like it the way I like it. If we were to hear a song that we don't particularly like, what do we do with that? If we were to hear a prayer that didn't really speak to what I need, what do we do with that? If we were to hear a sermon that really didn't speak to where I am on my spiritual journey, do we turn up our nose in disgust? Or do we have the capacity to think about who that might be speaking to, who that song might be singing to that is there as well or not there yet? We know what we like in terms of programs and things that we participate at the church. But when we look at all the diverse offerings, all the diverse ministries that happen at the church 7 days a week, do we say, why are we doing all these other things? Why are we wasting our time with those other things? Or do we give thanks that we can be so diverse, that we can welcome all those other people in ways that only a few things could? It's so hard for us to think of all those others, those that aren't here. When we think about founding the church on Jesus, I think there is a call implicit in that. Truth be told, there are some parts of the church that I love, and there's other parts that I don't love as much. And I suspect that's the same for you as well. It's a very wise person. My grandmother taught me a lot about ministry. She lived to 103 years of age. She was a proud United Church woman. She was a lifetime member, UCW. She had a pin, as many of ours do. Some of you do as well. And she told me once, I was being ordained that year, in the year of her 100th birthday. And she told me, do not fall into the trap of trying to please everyone. And as I was thinking about that, it always stuck with me. I thought the person that we're really, as a church, trying to please, the person that we truly are called to please, is Jesus. And that's probably the hardest person to please, isn't it? The person we're called to please as a church is that sacrificial, self-serving one we follow named Jesus Christ. There's a beautiful part in this text. Comes towards the very end, and it's so beautiful, and we often miss it because the translation from the Greek into the English, we just have different languages, of course. It's beautiful in English. You are God's temple. I suspect when you heard that, it was read so beautifully, it just touches our heart. I am God's temple. I mean, there's an implicit call in the way we treat our lives, the way we open our lives to others. You are God's temple. Isn't that a beautiful teaching that Paul offers? But it becomes even more beautiful if I explain to you what Paul was really saying in the Greek. The word you is actually a plural in the singular. You is a call that together, you, when we unite together, are God's temple. When we unite together, we become God's temple. Collectively, when we come together, then we're God's temple. It's a call for us to consider how our lives are inextricably bound together, together to be God's temple, to be the church. The church cannot, the church will not be the church without you and you and you and you And without all those people that we're missing, church can't be the church without everyone being a part of it. And I think, friends, that's why Stewardship Sunday is so vital for us to convene these conversations from time to time. It's so important for us to have a Sunday focusing on what stewardship means, and then for us to go away and pray and discern what that means for us individually. And it's so important for us to have stewardship pieces throughout every part of what we do on a Sunday morning and other activities through the week as well. Because we are charged with this responsibility of what we are called to do with God's stuff. And you are filled. You are each filled with incredibly good stuff of God. God's time, God's talent, God's treasure. And it's our call to share some of that back and truly be God's church in the world. This is an interesting time of the year. We're just nicely into the new year. I'm hoping that the snow doesn't return, and it feels like we're kind of into a nice new year of 2020. I think as we think of a new year, we often think about how we are going to budget into that new year, aren't we? We're certainly talking about that as a church as we get close to our AGM. We budget for a holiday we'd like to have in the year ahead. We budget for home renovations that we would like to do to our kitchen, perhaps. We budget our spending, don't we? This is also a good time for us to consider our spiritual budget, our budget of how we would like to share some of our time, the working of the church, some of our talent, some of our treasure, what we would like to commit so that the church might be lifted up and be a shining beacon of light into the larger community. Church cannot be the church without you. We give thanks that indeed you are all a part of it. There's a beautiful quote that I want to close our time with, and this comes from a very wise minister that I just really admire some of his words. He was looking back on 4 decades of ministry. This is what he thought about his ministry and the churches he served. I always want to be the sort of a church that is so bold, courageous, and risky in its ministry that if God doesn't want our ministry, it will utterly fail. On the other hand, I want a church that is so faithful that when people see us, they will say, there is really no reason for that church being there other than Christ wants it there. There is no sufficient explanation for why that church is still alive, still there, still witnessing, still serving, still enacting the gospel, except that Jesus really means for it to be there. That's the sort of church I wanted to serve. Amen.